This is Crow's Feet, a place where we ponder the question, are these our golden years? Or does aging just suck? Well, yes, getting older is not for the faint-hearted, but aging also brings wisdom and humor, a finely tuned perspective on life. In our podcast, you'll hear the voices of more than 300 writers who will inspire you and often make you laugh about this journey through life.
Hello, this is Jean Feldeisen. I'm a Crow's Feet writer, a therapist, and also a grandmother. Lately, I've been hearing a lot about grandparents who are raising their grandchildren. It's a topic we're going to explore in this episode of Crow's Feet. A recent article in the New York Times talks about all the grandparents who have stepped up to help when their family was in need because of the pandemic. The article focuses on over 160,000 American children and many more worldwide who lost parents due to COVID, and how many grandparents have taken on the role of parents. While the pandemic has increased the need for grandparents to step in and become caregivers, according to the 2019 U.S. Census, over 6 million children live with grandparents, and over 1.3 million of them depend solely on the grandparents' support. As a therapist, I've heard so many stories by clients who tell about the vital importance of a grandparent to their emotional and physical health during a difficult childhood. Indeed, grandparents have been playing an essential role in the lives of their grandchildren for a long, long time. So today we're going to talk to Lee Bench. Lee is a Crow's Feet writer and also a grandfather. I first met Lee through a story he wrote about what it's like to live with and cook for his 5 grandchildren. I had to know more. He's with me today. And before we talk about his experience living in a multi-generational household, Lee's going to read that story.
Amazing things happened when I turned my kitchen into a buffet. My blood pressure actually went down. I've been the family's head cook and beverage director for over 40 years. The job is a bit more complicated than it sounds, especially being a senior citizen with a house of teenagers. I am semi-retired, widowed, and in my upper 60s. While this is not unusual, what makes it exciting is I have 5 grandchildren and an adult daughter living with me, plus an occasional guest. How the number of kids and adults ended up in my house is another story. My daughter and I get along quite well, and the grandkids are great. Ages range from 2 to 20. We have moments of calm and relaxation with occasional blasts of over-emotional drama, but those tense times pass quickly. A large part of my job is feeding the clan, dinner in particular. They are on their own for other meals and snacks. I have a system that works pretty well. It's essential to maintain my composure, knowing that teens are complicated and there is no rationality behind their eating habits. Teens never stop eating, and they all have varying needs. One teen likes her meat well done, one won't eat beef at all, the other complains to be a vegetarian unless we go to McDonald's. The two toddlers want bowls of maple syrup mixed with mayonnaise and crackers, ice cream or candy. I give them cheese sandwiches instead. I enjoy sipping a martini while I cook, knowing that an ounce or two of alcohol soothes the nerves. I want to ensure the family has at least one well-balanced nutritional meal a day. Orderly sit-down dinners in our house disappeared a long time ago. Our family has variable schedules between scouts, dance classes, sports functions, and church events. There is nothing unique to the scenario, as I know many people whose daily plans are far worse. I discovered we are happier and more in tune with an informal dinner buffet, allowing the family to come and eat as they see fit. The logistics work out well. If I don't control the kitchen, I have found that people swoop in like swarms of termites, eating anything they can put their hands on, while asking when the next meal is. It's also incredible how teenagers can master the nuances of Minecraft, Fortnite, and an Oculus VR, but don't know how to wash a dish or put it in the dishwasher. Nor do they realize the thing that looks like a trash can is supposed to be used as one. So 10 years ago, I implemented a system to help with logistics, shopping, and menu planning, while controlling my blood pressure. My system is called the I Don't Know What I Want to Eat Kitchen Management System. I call it that because one can ask a teenager what they want for dinner. The answer is always, I don't know. Here is a summary of the system. Menus are put together on Saturday. Shopping is done by Sunday afternoon. Cooking time begins every day at 5:30. Food is laid out on the counter at 6:15. A text is sent to the adults and teenagers telling them dinner is ready. They have 1 hour and 15 minutes to come down and eat. Promptly at 7:30, leftovers are packed up and refrigerated or frozen for reuse. The kitchen is quickly cleaned. If they miss the window of opportunity, they are on their own for dinner. All I ask is they don't trash the kitchen. Dinner looks like the old happy hour buffets one would get at most bars before the pandemic, but I add a little bit more nutritional thought. The intention is to provide enough to eat so they'll stay out of the kitchen overnight, but good intentions are met many times with unwanted results. It's common to stagger out of bed in the morning, head to the kitchen for a cup of coffee, and find a gallon of milk, a block of cheese, a loaf of bread, and a half-eaten package of cookies on the counter. All of them blame their siblings and never take responsibility for the mess. The only good thing I can say is that they are home and not out on the streets doing teenager things like I did in the 70s. Sometimes I feel I'm fighting a losing battle on keeping them fed and the kitchen clean. But remarkably, my blood pressure has dropped since I put a title to my system. I'll stop ranting now. I've got to go start dinner. Tonight, I'm creating a pasta buffet.
Thanks so much, Lee. You make it sound like dinner time at your house is a lot of fun. Now, is that accurate?
Sure. You know, you could say it's a fun time. However, it can get pretty hectic in the kitchen. There's many times where the clan are all hungry before I'm done getting everything prepared, and they just kind of swoop in and create chaos. And it's my job to manage all that.
Yeah, that's fun. Speaking about fun, research suggests that living in a multi-generational family is reported to be a positive experience by about 57% of the grandparents interviewed, as opposed to 17% who regarded it as a negative. What would you say about that from your own experience?
So my experience is a little bit unique in that I had asked my daughter to move in with us along with all her kids. My wife had become critically ill way back in 2012, and I had a pretty aggressive job, so I was traveling a lot for work. So I'd asked my daughter to come in just to help out and be another set of hands while I was gone on business trips throughout the week. And I'm actually convinced that having the grandkids at the house extended my wife's life for up to 3 years. Just their companionship and their love and their caring, just meant so much to her. And she knew that her days were pretty numbered. So overall, it was a very, very unique experience.
And a beautiful thing to have for your wife at the end there, be able to have her grandchildren around.
Yeah, it was. And they experienced, her declining health so that, when she actually passed, it wasn't a big shock. It was a deep loss to all of us, but not necessarily a shock by any means. So it was a good transition.
They got to go through the whole thing with you both. So what is your relationship like with your daughter now? And how do you divide up parenting roles? Is that any kind of a problem?
Yeah, so I've made it a point to do away with the problems. My role is what I call the grand paternal influencer, kind of like a King Solomon-like figure. my daughter and I get along quite well, but, we have differing opinions on lots of things. And, I just figured it's not worth my time or effort or health to get my blood pressure all riled up every time there's a kid confrontation. So I spent a lot of time telling the kids, back down, because my health is at stake. And if you have issues, go talk to your mom. And that tends to work.
Good. I haven't come across any research from the grandchildren's point of view. So I wonder, do you have a sense of how they feel about living with you, with grandpa? Oh, wait a minute. I wanted to ask you, what do your grandchildren call you? Is it grandfather, papa, papa, pop, poppy?
Well, so they call me two things. They actually call me Gearad.
Gearad,
just like gears on a wheel, with Gearad. Ad, right? Yeah. And so that came from our 4-year-old granddaughter who, when she started talking, she could not say granddad. And somehow through her mangled conversational words, you know, that little kids have, it just kept coming out as gear app. So that spread amongst the other grandkids. And before I knew it, I was called gear app. And I've been introduced to friends and family and teachers and doctors as Gearad. And of course, people look at me like, what in the world kind of a name is that? But when I tell them the story, they understand. So I get called Gearad, but now it's evolved more towards Granddad.
Okay.
Occasionally I tell them, just call me God, which stands for Grand Old Dad.
So back to my original question was, how do you think they feel about living with you?
You know, I don't think they have any problem at all. You know, their fathers are invisible to them. It's a unique situation between my daughter and her companions in the past and, you know, some medical issues that somehow finally came to light that conventional birth control just wasn't working effectively. And that's how she ended up with five kids. So to them, I am, you know, the male influencer in their life.
Yeah.
You know, and I jokingly tell them that they just keep me around for finance, food, and transportation.
Well, actually, research from the Pew Institute talks about the two most common reasons for establishing a multi-generational household being finances and the need for childcare. You want to just talk about your reasons?
Sure. So, you know, I have a large house. And it just makes sense for, you know, my daughter to live with me instead of being out on the streets struggling to pay rent in a in substandard housing. So there's a financial layer there. And the trade-off is, you know, I'm not charging them rent by any means, but I do expect, you know, a certain amount of help and support in keeping the house clean. And she contributes quite a lot to food and groceries, you know, seeing that the bulk of who I feed are them, not me. All right. So it's just kind of this homogenous mix of, you know, me being landlord, granddad, you know, overall seer of the house. And the kids tend to enjoy that and appreciate it.
It gives them some structure.
Yes, it does.
You know, I've been reading that I think the census reports that 2019 census that 10% of grandparents are playing a role in raising their grandkids. I wonder if you've noticed this trend in other people your age. Do you have family or friends who are helping to raise their grandkids also?
Yes, actually, I do. It doesn't take long to look, you know, far beyond your own life to realize that there's other people in situations equal to or in some cases more challenging than my environment. So my colleague and founder of the company that I currently work for, he's pretty much in the same scenario. He's got six grandkids through multiple channels, and two of them are living with him and his wife right now, and the other four pretty much come and go throughout the week. And his role is pretty much the same, overall caretaker and oversight and help and support to his kids while they're struggling to raise their kids.
Yeah, I've noticed that with a lot of my friends as well.
Yeah.
It seems more common than it used to. Some sociologists are saying that the nuclear family is a thing of the past, and that since 1971, the number of people living in multi-generational households has quadrupled and shows no signs of slowing down. What's your sense of this? Does this seem like a good thing or a bad thing?
You know, I think it's a good thing. I come from a very tight-knit family anyway, you know, and for years and years and years, my parents have been integral parts of the growth of my family, as they were with the growth of my brother's family and my sister's family. You know, so to me, just family involvement is the thing to do, without question. Even after I got married and pulled away, my parents bought a house that was literally a mile away from where I live, and then another mile away from where my brother lived. They positioned themselves right in between the two of us, so that they could provide equal help and support and have access to multiple sets of grandkids.
Yeah.
And it worked out real well, right? And we were all together two or three times a week for various reasons, family dinners, happy hour drinks, gaming nights. And, you know, the kids just loved it.
Yeah, I had a similar experience with the extended family on both sides. I feel like they helped to raise me, which is a good thing.
It's a natural thing to do.
So let's talk a little bit about anything unexpected that came up. Were there any consequences, good or bad, that you or your daughter didn't anticipate when you made this arrangement? Of course, things have changed since she first moved in. You know, the reasons are different, but anything that you didn't expect?
Yes, actually. So once I had moved in, things were going pretty well. And then, my wife passed in December of 2017. My daughter was actually pregnant. And in March of 2018, about 3 months after my wife passed, my daughter delivered. The baby is healthy. And she's a great, great little girl. But 4 days later, after the birth of the baby, my grandson, who we knew needed a kidney transplant, a donor just appeared out of nowhere, and the donor matched everything perfectly. And the pediatrician, the nephrology team, decided it was as good of a time then to do a kidney transplant on the kid. And we had been projecting a donor not to be available for upwards of 2, possibly 3 years, not necessarily right. 4 months. So it really caught us off guard. So the unexpected aspect was my daughter had just had a baby, but now my grandson, who was 10 at the time, you know, had to have major surgery and had to have a guardian with him or a parent with him. So I ended up taking the ball and rolling with it. I moved into the hospital with him and lived at the children's hospital for 6 weeks and was his overall parent and guardian and medical power of attorney and basically got him through, you know, the surgery and the rehab that went along with
it.
Yeah. And my daughter, you know, as time went on, 10, 15 days later, you know, after the birth, she was able to regain her mobility. But the hospital that we were using is 50 miles away from where we live. And, down here in Houston, it's a high traffic area and not really one of the most pleasant places to navigate into. So it was complicated, I guess you could say.
Yes, sounds like it.
But it worked out, and he's healthy and doing okay.
That's a great story, Lee. Okay, so I just wanted to ask you one or two more things. How do you keep yourself going? What you do is takes a lot of work, takes planning, takes focus, it takes always being on. Mm-hmm. So do you take time off?
Oh, yeah, of course I do, right? So there's a couple of things to keep in mind. First is, my mother taught me you can manage anything that you want as long as you make a list and you plan your day according to the list. And actually, you know, for years and years and years, we just had to laugh at all the lists that she would make. And she was obsessed with it. But it's something that, you know, I just kind of extracted as kind of a part of my life, right? So when it comes to the logistics of the house, food in particular is one of the key components, you know, just trying to keep the clan fed and managed effectively. Years ago, I started, making a list of what the menu should be on a weekly or biweekly basis. And then I would build a shopping list, and then I would build a menu that ties to the shopping list, that ties to the days of the week. So on any given day, I could tell you exactly what ingredients I already had in place and what we were going to have for dinner. And I could do that 6 to 9 days ahead of time. And I stick to it, Gene. I do.
See.
It works out perfectly because there are times where I used to find myself waking up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat, wondering what in the world are we going to have for dinner? Well, I don't worry about that anymore. I've already written it down. And so it's committed to a list. And by God, I'm going to stick to that list come hell or high water.
Very good.
And then I stick it on the refrigerator for everybody to see. And, you know, if they have any issues or complaints or concerns or special requests, I'm able to take that into account. But I can at least guarantee that as a minimum, there will be a protein and a vegetable and some sort of another side order laid out for dinner. That whole process helps me kind of keep track of things, along with maintenance items around the house and the other projects that need to be taken care of. Going back to your original question, do I ever take a break? And the answer is yes. Once a week, I proclaim a day, and it's a random day that I select just based on how I feel and what other things are going on. I call it, what am I going to do for Lee Day? And I treat myself. I'll take a day off from work, you know, because it's a pretty flexible environment. And I'll either treat myself to a nice breakfast out or a nice lunch or drop in with some friends at a happy hour and or possibly just go and splurge for a nice, beautiful steak dinner someplace. And in between all of that, you know, I'll either drive down to the coast or out to the countryside and, you know, just kind of rest and relax and decompress and then show up back at the house. And I feel good and refreshed.
Good. That's great advice.
Yeah.
You talked about your bucket list. I wonder, how are you doing on your bucket list?
Oh, I think I'm only one item down. I've got like 35 items listed. So, you know, I'm not sure I'll ever get down to the end of it, but it obviously includes, you know, breaking away from the family, you know, in total exclusion and appreciating the solitude of getting up into the mountains and having the flexibility to either sleep in or have no responsibilities for anybody at any given time. So, you know, I envision ultimately becoming a Christmas card granddad. Instead of the guy there at the house making Christmas breakfast and Christmas dinner and dealing with the chaos of presents, I just want to be the guy that sends the family a Christmas card and says, have a great day, you know, and I want to send them pictures of eating oysters on the Pacific Northwest coast, you know, one day and then hanging out at Times Square on the next day. You know, I want to be as flexible and liquid as one could imagine. And then just let the family grow and develop and become the people that they need to be.
You're certainly doing your part to make that all happen.
Yeah.
Do you have any suggestions for other grandparents, other people in your situation?
You know, my only suggestion, Gene, is you need to take a 360-degree view of your family situation. You know, I have a lot of friends that are, you know, a little narcissistic and self-centered, who would have absolutely nothing to do with their families other than they did their best. They raised them and at age 18 or 19, they kicked them out and off they went. And I just can't do that. To me, it's an ongoing, very dynamic environment where there needs to be guidance and involvement at, you know, any given time.
Well, that's great advice. Well, I want to thank you so much, Lee, for talking with us today. And can I call you Gearad?
Yes. You may.
Thank you, Gearad.
All right. Okay, Gene. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, Kara. If you could think of one thing you want me to make for dinner next week, what would that be?
I don't know.
Today's episode was produced by me, Gene Feldeisen. Our guest was Crow's Feet writer Lee Bench. Our executive producer is Nancy Peckenham. Editing and sound design by Rich Halton, with support from our Crow's Feet team, Betsy Allen, Kathy Dunn-Gilbert, Jan Flynn, and Warren Turner.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Crow's Feet, Life as We Age. Don't miss any of our great stories. Subscribe to Crow's Feet wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to tell your friends and family to give a listen to and leave a rating or review. You can read more Crow's Feet stories online at medium.com/crows-feet. And check back next month for a new episode. So until next time, remember to savor every moment. As Robert Brault said, enjoy the little things, for one day you may look back and realize they were the big things.